You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
Amen. 1510wwbc.com. You can select the Listen Live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Or if you'd like the archive of our show, you can also get it from the on-demand section from 1510wwbc.com. And of course, Sita and I share it on all of our social media channels, including our website, which is sitamediainc.com, with great pictures and a download of our show each and every week.
Right. And today's no different. That's right. On Mondays, we sit here and we heat up the airwaves right here in Cocoa, Florida. We speak to people from the business community, people who are running for office, folks who run a bank, who wants to own a bank, people who have mortgage companies, whatever it is, nonprofits. We even have singers and actors and actresses, whatever it is. Our show gives folks a platform to come on and share their life experience and their stories with us. Right. And today's no different. We've got our friends from Green Gables are here, and they're going to be on the second segment, Miss Ellen. We have Mauricio Camargo, with an R. My R, I wrote like an N.
I know.
That's what you get for writing fast. So Mr. Mauricio Camargo is here, second segment, and he's the director of fundraising for Green Gables. And then we have Anne Farrington. She's the director of technology, and you're going to be on second segment. You could say hello if you want right now, and then we'll go on to our first segment.
Hello. We're so happy to be here. Thank you.
We got a lot of great things to talk about with Green Gables,
so,
that's for sure.
So that's a voice. Ellen O'Neill is here. She is my co-host for 14 years. Thank you, Ellen, for being here. And we have our good friend, Allie Tambor is here. Allie is what we call our resident guest. She shows up with Ellen and she helps just keep us company. And sometimes we'll ask her to say something and sometimes we just don't have time because we run out of time. So thank you for being here too.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So I do have a few public service announcements of some things that are going on in our community. First of all, our good friends over at Love, Inc. have an annual gathering celebrating 20 years here in Brevard County, Florida. That event is going to be tomorrow, October 10th from 6 to 8. It was a free event, but I believe it's sold out. But Love, Inc. is one of those great organizations that you should definitely be a part of and find out more of. Islands of Caribbean Gala, the One Love, an evening of elegance, was actually Saturday the 14th, right? October 14th?
Yes.
You had a great time? Did you have a great time? Did you go?
To what?
The 14th? Oh, it's this
up.
Week, this Saturday.
You've been singing
goodness.
And dancing too much.
I know, I have.
But it
I
is
got
only
my
the
weeks
ninth.
Confused. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay, so this Saturday, an evening of elegance, that is going to be at the Holiday Inn Vieira Conference Center, which is on Melbourne, in Wickham Road in Melbourne. And then we also have a Native Rhythms Festival coming up. That's November 10th through the 12th. That's going to be at Wickham Park. And that's a day and evening concerts, food, jewelry, flutes, drums, workshop. They have free admission for that. And then, of course, an Artworks of O'Galley is going on also in November, which is the 18th and 19th. And that's a community art festival done by a nonprofit in O'Galley, Florida. So lots of great things to plan for and wonderful things going on in Brevard County.
You're correct about dates, though, because today's my husband's birthday. Happy birthday, oh,
happy
to
birthday,
Dr. McGee.
Ellen.
And I forgot his birthday because I thought today was September 9th.
Okay, good.
So it's okay. It's
so
all right.
We're all on the same page.
It's all right. It's all right. So sitting next to me is Mr. Jim DeRosha, and he's got an important story to tell, and he's got a lot of things to talk about. He's a Florida native, a retired kayak outfitter, a coastal master naturalist. He will fit right in with what my husband does. And his concern for Florida's waterways has led him to become one of the founding members of the Florida Rights of Nature Network, hence what his shirt says, the right to clean water. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're going to go right to our first segment to Mr. Jim DeRocher, and he's going to talk to us and tell us a little bit about why he cares so much about the waterways. You know, we all learn from history, we learn from each other, we learn from life experiences. A lot of us learn from the people that came before us, and I think most of us just want to leave a good footprint behind for this generation and the next generation and our grandchildren if we're so blessed to have them. And you're no different, Mr. Jim. So take it away. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with our friend Mel in Florida Right to Clean Water.
All right. Thanks, Sita and Ellen.
And the others.
Yeah.
There are a lot of them, but the rest of the name.
In this huge room. And happy Indigenous Peoples Day. So this is quite a day. And we've got an amendment that we're trying to get on the ballot for 2024. And we've got people working all over the state to get this on the ballot. And clean water ambassadors. And what it would do is give a fundamental right to the people of Florida for clean water.
I have to say, why do we need an amendment for people to have clean water? Wouldn't you think that that's something that we already have?
Yes, you would think that. And we have in the state statutes, we have our own Environmental Protection Act, but there's a subsection in that that grants rights to permit, the agencies can permit pollution to be put into our waterways.
Well, it's just like all the boats and everybody that have, you know, that it's unfortunate, but that's the facts of life. So what do we do about things like that?
The UN even states that, you know, there's a human right to water entitles everyone the sufficient, safe, acceptable, physically accessible, and affordable water for personal and domestic use.
Although, sadly, in so many parts of the world, that is not true.
Right.
And I can tell you, when I was a child, and thank God I had such an upbringing, you know, back in the day, I thought we were really poor. But honestly, I got the best experience from growing up poor, so to speak. But we had a water truck that would come by, and a woman will line the streets with their buckets, or if you were lucky enough to have a barrel, and you could fill that barrel with water. And the water was rationed. Clean water was rationed. So we used rainwater for washing and cooking and things like that. But I'm glad you're doing this. I'm really happy that you and Mel and so many volunteers are doing this. Let's talk a little bit about the Indian River Lagoon and the conditions in the Indian River Lagoon, how that has affected life, marine life, and food, and everything else in the lagoon.
Right. Well, just on one instance of that, where you talk about food, Dixie Crossroads Restaurant, which is a famous restaurant in Brevard County, used to serve food all out of the Indian River Lagoon. Now they serve zero food out of the Indian River Lagoon, because it's lost its productivity.
Which Dixie Crossroads is one of our sponsors. She's been with us for 14 years, helping on our show.
Okay.
So talk to us a little bit about Florida's waterways. How safe it is and how unsafe is it?
Well, it's we have a real issue in the Indian River Lagoon. We lost 1,100 manatees in 2021, 800 last year. This year we're up to 472, and you know, the really bad stuff started in 2011, 2012. We had algal blooms, and the algal blooms covered the surface and filled the water with algae. Sunlight didn't get down to the seagrass died. We lost 46,000 acres of seagrass in the lagoon. Well, that's the food source. It's also what starts all the little fish. Everything that you know, so much of the ocean biodiverse creatures out there start in an estuary. Estuaries are the nursery grounds for the ocean.
Yeah. So if all the nonprofits to get involved with in Florida, you chose this one, and that's because you just love nature.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm involved with several different ones.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you would be the right man to tell us how many natural springs are there in Florida?
Well, we have
over
1,000 natural springs. It's the highest densest concentration of springs of anywhere on this planet. And what a treasured resource. And we take it for granted. You were talking about water. The average person uses about 100 gallons of water a day. You know, when I go camping, I take 1 gallon per day. And I get by with that. And that's for food, drink, and washing my hands.
Are the springs in good condition?
No. The springs have all kinds of excess nitrogen in them. That's coming from either farmland that the fertilizers sink down into the ground, or runoff from people's yards, fertilizer there. Chemicals that people are using are getting into the springs. So the water coming out is, you know, it's full of nutrients.
Contaminated. So this is a good time for you to tell our listeners, Mr. Jim DeRocher, a little bit about nitrogen and phosphorus,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of people don't understand when they're walking their dogs, if they don't pick up their waste, what happens when that runs into the water. They don't understand when the rain falls, if you have a rain barrel, how that would help. They don't understand that checking a septic tank that's leaking would help when you have a rain and it rolls right into the lakes and the rivers and everything. People just, I think everything in life comes down to an education, right?
It does.
So educate them a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, what picking up your animal's waste is just preventing a lot of nutrients from going into the environment. Septic tanks are a major issue in the Indian River Lagoon. There's tens of thousands of septic tanks that feed into the Indian River Lagoon. And there's some places where they shouldn't have been approved, and they're converting a lot of those over to sewer, the central sewer, but then you have to deal with the biosolids after that happens, because one of the problems in the St. John's River is the biosolids from South Florida that's being dumped around the Presley Ranch and things around Blue Cypress Lake down by Vero Beach, and then that funnels into Blue Cypress Lake, which is the headwaters of the St. John's River. And so you have algal blooms going on there. The people in Melbourne get their water from Lake Washington, and they've had blue-green algae blooms there.
Yeah. I live in Lake Washington, and we've paid a visit to the plant there. Now, the springs are in bad condition. What about the lakes? We have so many lakes, and everywhere there's a subdivision, or you see a lake going up, too.
Right.
So are they in better condition than the springs?
Well, those are more retention ponds, right?
Well,
more
there
so
are a lot of
lakes,
too.
Are there, too?
Yeah.
But, yeah, both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
retention
yeah.
ponds, I think the contractors have to have those. But there's so many lakes, too.
Yeah. Florida is incredible lakes. Unfortunately, we just passed this last year. We became the number one state in the country that has polluted lake water, too polluted for swimming or aquatic life. We have the very most acres of polluted lake water in the country.
Well, and I want to read what's off the website, because this is a really powerful statement in the About Us section of the Florida Right to Clean Water.org website. The right to clean and healthy water is a stopgap, declaring that no more harm will be allowed to our waters. We as Floridians will decide whether our waters being clean and healthy are more important or less important to our state government than the profits that polluters earn by polluting and degrading our water. So, you know, what Mel and what Jim are talking about and being part of this organization, it's really about putting in laws to make sure that we don't do any more harm. There are going to be, you know, people with waste and all of those things, and the things that happen as homeowners certainly contribute to it. But the big companies and so forth that are allowed these dumping grounds to be able to infiltrate our waters and to not just in that one area, but the ripple effect, so to speak,
well,
of all of the other lakes and the areas that get contaminated.
Well, and
as
and
a
it
result.
Becomes political at that point with
right.
big sugar and all that. So
sure.
we're gonna stay away from that at this moment, because you know that's what happens. Because then you have to see who's contributing to who and which campaign and all that. But for a taxpayer who's saying, or a human being who lives here in Brevard and is saying, well, how does this affect me? Explain to them why signing this petition, the right to clean water, how does it affect that person?
Well, they want to have water to recreate in. You know, whether they're a kayaker or a fisherman, if you're going to eat fish, you want to catch them out of clean water. You don't want the pollutants going into you and your children. You want people to be able to swim in the water, to use the water the way it was intended to be used. And this would protect all the waters of Florida, the rivers, lakes, streams, estuaries. We have over 9 million acres of estuaries that are contaminated with fecal coliform. And you know, miles and miles of rivers and streams that have fecal coliform along the shoreline. So this is actually something from that Mel wrote in The Invading Seas, but it's the state agencies that have failed to hold their ground against political pressures and other forces intent on placing polluters' interests above us and our waters. It's the system itself that we need to attack, not the people.
Right.
You know, every business is run by a human being. And every political or public official is a natural person with a family, and they need water.
Right. Well, that just brings me to, like, you know, I've always said, and you know, Ellen, I've said I'm going to send this to governments all over the world. When you give birth to a child in a hospital or a nursing facility, wherever you, people prefer home births, I don't even know anymore. But there should be, like, a questionnaire. And when that child comes out, child is born, it should say, do you care about an education, yes or no? Do you have a home for this child, yes or no? Do you have a means of sending this child to school, yes or no? Do you care about the environment, yes or no? Do you care about clean water, air, and a right to life, yes or no? And I think if people start thinking like you just said, a politician is a human being. He breathes and eats and sleeps just like us. He has a family. He has grandmothers, grandfathers, people who need to go in a nursing home, people who need nursing assistants and nurses. Everybody, we're all connected. The world mm-hmm. is connected. So how do you get more people to understand that, yeah, you might be enjoying the world right now as it is, but think about what you're doing. Where are you throwing that piece of paper? What are you doing with your leftover food? What are you doing with your groceries that you didn't use, do you have a compost?
One more thing to add to this too, is that when people say my vote doesn't count, you know, whether I vote or not, it doesn't matter, right? When you're in a petition state, much like what this organization is doing, 100 petitions is probably not going to get somebody's attention, but 1 million petitions, 2 million petitions where we're saying, no, we're not going to have this anymore. We're not going to allow this to happen. We're not going to let these companies run our communities and run our, whether or not we're able to kayak in our own backyard or not.
So
2 million petitions, that's again, on the website, the whole mission is to take Florida voters, to educate them, collect petitions, and to ensure their voice is heard. If there was ever a time that you could be a part of something that you know your voice is going to be heard, it would be this organization.
Right. You know, a lot of people are afraid to sign petitions. So, Mr. Jim DeRosa, explain to them why it's important that if they want to sign the petition, that they should. And I've heard people say, will this increase my taxes? You know, when they sign a petition to get something from the legislature.
Well, that's an interesting concept. But actually, it would save them money in the long run, mm-hmm. right? Because if you, it's so much cheaper to stop the pollution before it goes into the environment than it is to try to clean it up later.
Yes.
So, and as far as the information that's on the petition, it's all public information. Anybody can get anything that's on the petition right from the tax office.
Yeah, because even when you're trying to get somebody to sign for someone to get on the ballot, people are so skeptical. They're like, I don't want to give you my name, my phone number, my address,
right,
because I don't know what you're going to do with it. They want to be educated on
right
it. So what do you tell them when you approach someone with the petition and you say, and you, they say, but why do I need another law? I thought we already had laws on the books.
Yeah.
What do you say to them?
Well, we've got plenty of laws on the books. It's just that the agencies can issue permits. And unfortunately, the political pressure at the top pushes the agencies to do those permits. And once a permit is issued, no legal action can be taken against that company or that corporation or entity that is polluting our waters.
Right.
And according to my information, it is harder to get a permit for building in Palm Bay than it is to get a permit to dump waste. Like, it is harder to get a roof permit, to get a roof put on your house, than it is to get a permit. It's easy to get a permit to dump.
Right.
Much easier. Yep. And that's sad.
Well,
it shouldn't be that easy.
Well, they've issued 23,000 in the last 50 years, the state of Florida has. National Pollution Discharge Elimination Permits.
I think what you have to do, too, is like when people go to a restaurant and everybody likes seafood. They like shrimp and crab and fish. And you'll hear people who are vegetarians sometime would say, I don't eat chicken or beef or pork, but I eat fish. But tie that into why it's so important to sign this petition for clean water, not just, you know, the Indian River Lagoon, but, you know, elsewhere where people fish. Because once you tie it into the algae blooms and the tourism industry and the amount of jobs it brings to our area and real estate, once you tie that all in, then a light bulb goes up and people say, oh, really, I love to eat shrimp from the Indian River Lagoon.
Yeah. Well, fishermen have really come on board recently with this petition. We need 900,000 of them across the state. So, and we're running out of time. We only have till the end of this year to get the petitions in. So it's really important for everyone to sign the petition. The information is all on the internet anyway, so there's nothing that we're asking for with that. And get 5 or 10 other people to sign the petition also.
Right. So if someone is listening right now and they want to sign this petition for the right to clean water, where can they go? Give us the website.
Okay. It's floridarighttocleanwater.org. They can go right to that website. We've made it very simple. They can go to the website. They can download the petition. It has to be a wet signature, which means they have to actually download it, print it, and sign it to get it, and then mail it in. Or they can go to one of our petition locations.
Right. And would this give citizens like a fundamental right? Explain to them, you know, what kind of rights are they getting if we should get this petition?
Right. Well, fundamental rights are much stronger than legislative laws. So basically, we passed this in Orange County. The people voted it 89% of the vote for a right to clean water in Orange County. But the state came along and said they preempted it. So basically, that's what forced us to go for a state amendment. And that's why we're into the state amendment concept right now. And, you know, if we can get 900,000, we'll get it on the ballot. We know the people will vote for it. And fundamental rights are like the right to vote, the right to assemble peaceably, the right to bear arms. Those are the fundamental rights. They're the strongest right that people have. And that's what we need, because the system isn't working. If it was working, we wouldn't have all these algal blooms and die-offs of fish. We wouldn't have the marine mammal mortality events that we've been having the last several years. And so it would change the way that the agencies do business in Florida and the permit process.
Right. Well, you know, it seems as though human beings don't get involved in anything unless it affects their pocketbook. Like when people had to buy extra eye drops because the algae bloom made their eyes red. Or when someone goes to a restaurant, they eat something and somebody says, oh, it's a stomachache.
Or the million-dollar houses that have red tide behind them.
Red tide, that's what I'm getting at. Or when the manatees are dying and everyone is taking pictures and posting them on social media. How do we get more people to care about Mother Earth?
Well,
it is our Earth. We have to take care of her.
Yeah, it's been surprising that that the real estate industry hasn't jumped in to be involved in this. And the tourism agency. You know, they should be pushing this in every one of their meetings, because they depend on tourism. Tourism depends on clean water. Florida is the clean water state, or it used to be. It's not anymore, but it could be again.
Yeah. So I know at one point, because there was a big lagoon, you know, there's still big lagoon pieces, and Chesapeake Bay figured it out, right? It was a long process and so forth, but did they also do what the Florida Clean Water Act is doing? Did they also mandate the permitting and stuff? Was that part of the program that they did up there that cleaned up that estuary up in Chesapeake Bay?
No, they did it a different way. They just got all the states to agree, and they just decided to do it. Now, if you look at their report card, they're only up to a D+.
Right. I'm not saying it's great.
Yeah. So they've still got a long way to go, but I've talked with one of the people from up there, and you know, they're going the right direction, and we're still going the wrong direction. And the state gave us $100 million for the Indian River Lagoon this last year, okay? And the people of Brevard County gave $300 million over 10 years with that half-cent sales tax that they voted on themselves to improve the lagoon. So you're talking about trying to save money. We wouldn't need that half-cent sales tax on there if we wouldn't have polluted the water to start with.
If we would just
Right. Again, it comes down to education all the time. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking to Mr. Jim DeRosa, and he's the East Central Regional Director of FRONN. Tell us what it means again.
Florida Rights of Nature Network.
Now, this whole situation, the petition, has evolved over time. Quickly, with the last couple of minutes left, tell us how this got started.
It started in 2019. A grassroots group of environmentalists and lawyers and business people got together, and we just saw a major problem. We went to democracy school, had a fella come down and teach us how democracy really works, and we had a conference in Gainesville at the Law Center there at the University of Florida, and this Florida Rights of Nature Network came out of that conference.
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of people don't understand too is when the environment, especially the waterways, is not clean and you're not breathing in proper your clean air, it does affect your mental health, your physical health. It affects every part of your nervous system. And people don't understand that, because when I lived on the river, you could breathe sometime and tell when the river is bad.
Mm-hmm.
You could smell the blooms in there, you know. And I think a lot of people don't pay attention because they don't go anywhere near the rivers. A lot of people are just cocooned in their homes.
Right.
So how do we get those people to say, listen, it doesn't affect me now, but it's going to affect me later on, or if it will affect my children?
Well, it will. I mean, eventually they're going to go over the bridge, or they're going to have some interaction with the waterways in some ways. Because it's not just the lagoon, it's the rivers, it's the lakes, it's the estuary.
It's the
aquifer. Yeah, 90% of us get our drinking water from the aquifer. This amendment will protect the aquifer. It protects groundwater, and that's vitally important.
Well, so people will say, I went to the springs, and then when we got there, we couldn't get into the water because they have reasons why they couldn't get in. And a lot of times, it's because of pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And then you try to say to them, well, what are you doing to help that? You bring them back to, well, you know, I'm here, and I can't enjoy Florida. So give our listeners the website one more time, because you're seeking donations, monetary contributions, and you're also seeking people to volunteer and help.
Mm-hmm.
So give us a website so people could go on, and if they have a couple of hours to spare or a little few cents in their pocket to help for clean water, why not?
Right. Yep. They can go right to the website, FloridaRightToCleanWater.org, and there's a donate button on there. There's a video that we just produced that's that they can watch. And share, and they can, you know, become an ambassador, sign up to be an ambassador. That's a huge thing. We need more clean water ambassadors out there getting petitions.
Well, we have shirts now, Sita, so.
Yes, yes,
we
yes.
We can be vice ambassadors.
Yeah. And so, Mr. Jim DeRosa, is there anything else you want to tell the listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about the right to clean water before your segment ends?
Just that, you know, we've made it easy for everybody. We've done the we've created the organization, we've written and filed the amendment, we've done the marketing and network with thousands of volunteers and hundreds of businesses and organizations throughout the state. It only takes 5 minutes to download the petition, sign it, and stick it in an envelope and mail it.
There you have it, Miss Ellen.
That's
we're,
right.
We're doing our best to spread the information. We've always said that Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is a very fun, unscripted, educational, and very we give out very valuable information. And I think for the future of Mother Earth and our planet and us who live here in Brevard, it's only imperative that we spread this good information.
Absolutely. And we'll share all of the website and all of the great information, the easiest way to download that petition. Make sure we share that on our website as well as all of our social media channels. And we're going to hear from our sponsors real quick, especially from Dixie Crossroads, who is one of the big supporters of the Florida Clean Water Act.
Yeah. One last thing would be that environmental issues are often synonymous with social justice issues. And this is one of those.
Gotcha.
We'll hear from our sponsor. We'll be right back. It's Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you. Call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. At 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at Dixie Crossroads. Small Financial Group is a certified.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a robust first segment we had, all about the amendment for the right to clean water with Mr. Jim DeRosier. Our second segment is with our really good friends from Green Gables. We have Anne Farrington here and Maurice Camargo.
Mauricio Camargo.
Yes. Thank you, Miss Ellen. That's why I have you. I tell you, when we tell you...
Well, you're great at all the Indian names. I don't have those.
Yeah, I bet you can't can't say Dan Patia Patpat Singh.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Or Bhagwan Singh.
Exactly.
I bet you can't say that.
I can't.
Yeah. So our second segment, you know, we've been supporters of Green Gables for the 14 years we've been on air. I think we've had Green Gables on maybe 5 or 6 times.
Yes.
Plus... Marian Ambrose is a very good friend of mine, and she's been over to have tea. And when you make it to my house to have tea, you know you're good friends.
That's right.
So before we start the segment, we want to tell our listeners that my good friend Ojas is here as well. And Ojas is here, and she's just listening to our show today. Maybe one day she'll come on.
Right. Fantastic realtor up in Titusville, right? With what company? With One Sotheby's up in Titusville. So check her out if you're looking for any... real estate needs up in
She's just visiting with us to see how the show goes. So let's go right to Anne. Anne, give us a little background on how you got started with Green Gables.
Well, I was a teacher with Marian for 20 years, and she came over to Green Gables because she was president of the Women's Club, and so was Nora Stanford. And so she got enchanted with Green Gables, and she said, Anne, we need a website, and that's kind of one of the things that I do. But in addition to that, my name is Anne with an E. And growing up, my favorite book was Anne of Green Gables.
Oh.
And my favorite movie was Anne of Green Gables. And she said, Anne, we need you at Green Gables. And I said, what? I said, what Green Gables? She said, Green Gables of Melbourne. And so that's how I got involved. The minute that I came to Green Gables, I also was enchanted and fell in love and been there ever since.
I mean, and who does not fall in love with Green Gables, right? Green Gables is also known as the Wells House for listeners who are just tuning in. It's a historic home that was built in 1501. It's right here in Melbourne, and I'm going to have Mauricio talk to us a little bit about the history of Green Gables.
So the house was actually founded in 1897. Mr. Wells and Mrs. Wells came down from upstate New York, where Mrs. Wells was having some health issues and she just needed to find a better place to live and have clean water.
Way to tag that in there.
yes. He's a good marketer.
And so he was an inventor, and he predominantly was looking for a better place to live and whatnot, and founded the home here. And he was... created an artesian well. There was an artesian well at the house, and he put a generator there to create electricity for the home and bring other innovations to Melbourne.
So some key developments, some great things that happened recently at Green Gables, and I'm sure you could talk to us about this, being the one of the ladies who've been involved. Something great happened on June 12th, 2023, about the ownership of Green Gables. And I know there was a gathering, and the Florida Today was there, and we had a great announcement. Tell our listeners what happened on that day.
Well, on that day, the deed was transferred from the fourth generation of the Wells family to Green Gables 501c3 nonprofit.
That's right. And Mauricio, in addition to the Wells family leaving this historic home behind for us, they also were very cultural in what they did at that time here in Melbourne. So tell our listeners a little bit about what the family did and why the legacy of that family was so important for all of us, self-included, to write letters to the Historical Society of Florida. And all of us pushed for a grant, to get the grant so that we could save this house.
Well, the family was very geared towards cultural diversity. And so over the past 127 years, but when they first started, they helped build the first auditorium here in Melbourne, helped the library get funded here, and also the first high school. They had children as well. And Nora Stanford Wells was very involved in reading. Was like Anne had mentioned earlier, she was the first woman's president for the book club. And so the one thing that was important to them was being able to educate the people that were here and move forward on a lot of things. So the Green Gables continues to do that today, and we want to move that process forward along with the cultural diversity, especially for children, right, and the education.
And the style of the house, it's so unique that a lot of people don't see that style anymore. Talk to our listeners, give them a vision of what this house is, how it looks now, and how it was built.
The house was built in a very simple process, because back in the day, they didn't have the artisans or carpenters to actually build a house. And it was more like, it was actually two separate buildings, and it was more squared off. But over time, they added a number of different things, including the steeple and the front porch in front of the house. And you have to look at these folks and this family as the Great Gatsbys. They were upstate New York, and they were very well connected politically. One of the uncles of Nora was the senator in New York, and we have a connection with Stanford University because the other uncle was the governor of California and founded Stanford University. So we have this connection with them. But they lived a life that was very opulent, and at the same time, it was very simple. Some of the things that they wanted to do here was just enjoy South Florida and what South Florida had to offer at the time.
Right. And Mrs. Wells was, she has a connection to the women's, the club as well. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so her passion was education and literacy. And so she would invite the ladies from the town to come over, and she really wanted a book club. That was her big thing. And so there was no library in Melbourne at the time. And so she said, William, we really need a library, because she had brought her personal books from New York, and she would have the ladies borrow her own personal books, but she really wanted to have a book club. So literacy was very important to her. And they were instrumental in building, like Mo said, the first high school and the first library here in Melbourne.
Right, and Mauricio, I think the grant was for $482,000, and that was matched. So now that we've purchased the property, what is the next step? What is happening now?
So right now we've hired an architect, and we have a historic structure report that's in progress. The report will document Green Gables' history, existing condition, and recommendations to deal with existing issues. We're applying for grants, and we've just got a grant for $10,000 from the Community Foundation for Brevard to bring city water to the grounds and install Victorian. We need a black aluminum fence around the property. For all the events that we have, and for the safety of the kids who come to our education program.
There's so much activity at the house, and I know people are excited. We've got people lining up to help restore Green Gables to her glory. But in order to do so, you have to have a lot of events and fundraising so you could bring in the money, Mr. Mauricio, and that's your forte. So tell our listeners about the big gala that's coming up. They have enough money to save, even if it's $20 a week, to save that money to come to that big gala.
Yeah, we have a big gala that's coming up on February 9th. It's going to be at the Grand Manor. It's going to be an amazing affair with music and dancing. We have the band called Dreamer with lots of food, hors d'oeuvres, an elegant buffet dinner, desserts. We even have a live auction with Sheriff Wayne Ivey as our auctioneer, so it's going to be a grand time. We've got great prizes, gifts, and more, plus we'll also have a silent auction for some quality artwork and prints. But even before that auction, we're going to have something coming up right away. It's called Foggy Bluff. We've done this for a number of years, and the tagline for this year is Foggy Bluff, Dead and Breakfast. So it's going to be bigger and better. It's going to be from October 19th through the 22nd, and the following weekend, the 26th through the 29th. In addition to that, we have a murder at the museum on February 23rd and 24th. You've got two shows to choose from at the Fraternal Order of Police, which is on Julia Street in Melbourne.
That's awesome. Right. What great events.
And you're looking for sponsors for Foggy Bluff, I understand?
Yes.
As well as for the big gala. So when we say sponsors, folks, we don't mean, you know, like bring some old clothes and drop it off. We mean if you are generous enough to have a little change that you could send our way to take care of Green Gables so we could take care of the house. It means make a monetary contribution. If you could mow grass and you want to come and bring your own lawnmower and that's fine. If you're a painter, an architect, and whatever, contact Green Gables. So let them know what they need to do for Foggy Bluff and the gala.
Sure. So for Foggy Bluff, we're looking for sponsors to cover part of the cost for the cast and crew and t-shirts, which amounts to like about $300. But there's going to be costs for materials and food and even candy that we're going to give out for the kids. People can contact Marion Ambrose at 321-794-8901, or you can donate directly through our webpage with a note saying Foggy Bluff donation.
Right.
For the gala, we're looking for some donors to underwrite the cost of the gala, and the proceeds can be used for restoration or in-kind donations such as gift cards, merchandise, play or movie tickets, etc., are all welcome as tax deductible, just like cash donations. We also have a tiered sponsored levels, and our great friend over at the Green Gables, Anita, you can reach her at 321-306-8635, and you can take donations, or you can make your donations there with Anita.
And I'm on the Green Gables website now, and I want to talk about, the gala is fantastic, but I know there's a lot of construction people, some of my construction owners that are listening today. And there's a window restoration workshop, and two of my friends are working on 1,800-year-old buildings, like from the 1800s. And there's actually a window renovation or restoration workshop, and that's going to be also November 11th, 9 to 5. It's $100, but you get lunch, you get a classroom experience, you get restoration tools, and all epoxy wood repair, and like an education.
You go
on
to
how
school at Green Gables,
right? Exactly.
And
so,
and Anne's shaking her head. You want to talk?
You forget
about
the whole piece about restoring old things, and what a great opportunity that is for somebody that's in construction that is working on older buildings. Because we've got you could go do a Habitat for Humanity house and learn about building a house. But where do you learn how to go restore a house? And what a perfect opportunity for somebody to want to donate maybe some time, or certainly attend one of the classes, be part of that. So what a cool thing.
Yeah. So Anne, you want to talk a little bit about the restoration and the classes that's coming up? Do you know anything?
Well, this is a rare opportunity because it's not offered very often, but this expert will come in and really teach you the classic way to repair windows. But it is limited to only 10 people. So if mm-hmm. you are interested and you're hearing the sound of my voice, you might want to go and register. There's John Daly is the one that is in charge of this.
Yes.
But it also goes to show the different kinds of things that Green Gables offers. You know, besides, you know, this is an adult workshop, but our education program is amazing.
Well, you guys have become like a hub now for education and history, and people come there to actually learn stuff. So, Mauricio, we don't have a lot of historic buildings in Melbourne anymore. This one is going to be our shine and star. Talk to our listeners a little bit about how the Green Gables is going to revitalize, in my mind, downtown Melbourne. It's going to give people something to do, something to speak about, something that the children could put their phones down and learn about architecture and learn about some of the materials that Mr. Wells used in that home were from India, that people don't even know that, but it is. And about the trunk that they used the pulley to get that upstairs. Talk to us a little bit about the house and what people will learn when they come to tour Green Gables.
So, you know, when you look back to 1897 and you ask yourself, like, how do these people get here? So roadways were not available. The best way they would get through the Green Gables was by steamship, and eventually a barge would bring over whatever it is that they needed into the house, the construction materials that were needed to build a home. All these things are part of what eventually became the city of Melbourne. So all the land that the Wells family donated to make that possible and feasible. But more importantly, you know, we could talk about the Green Gables all day long, but it's not until you actually come and visit that you really begin to understand and see the labor and the hard work that it took to make this a reality. So since 1897, the Green Gables has been here and withstood so many different things and has become a part of history. And our goal is to take that and move that forward and to teach our kids and have them come and understand and learn some of these master crafts that have now gone by the wayside, you know, such as this window repair or any other repairs that are going to be done to the home. We've got some really good relationships with the Boy Scouts that have come out and actually donated a bench and created a lot of wonderful things here, and they're very helpful in the things that we need done. But more importantly, one of the things that we want to carry forward is to have that education piece for the kids, because when they come over, they get so engaged in what's going on with the activities that we're doing, that they forget about their cell phones or iPads and whatnot and continue to just really just have fun.
Yes, yes. And I think the house, watching it rebuild, it's like a project for everybody now. People are looking out for the next step, what's going to happen next with Green Gables. But most importantly, the location. Can you tell our listeners, and where exactly Green Gables is located at? And I know it's on a beautiful piece of property. We all wanted that green space to be kept for us. So talk to our listeners about the layout of the land and where exactly Green Gables is in Melbourne.
So if you're familiar with Melbourne, it's not far from downtown. It's located right on US 1. And there's a hibiscus, there's a light right there. And so it's right really on the corner of Hibiscus and US 1. And we have an acre and a third right on the river. And we are also very interested in clean water. So we are a natural habitat. We do want to do our part with clean water as well. But it's almost like a park. Our grounds are so beautiful. And the house is very distinct with the Queen Anne style of it. So we would just encourage people to come out and see it. We've already had thousands of people tour our home since Marion was president. And when they leave, they all leave very uplifted because they've either come as a tour of the house or come to one of our great events.
Mm-hmm. You know what's interesting about that house? Everybody has houses where you could feel this breeze coming. But at Green Gables, when you sit on the porch and that breeze comes through, it's almost like the spirit of the Wells family is right there. You could feel that breeze on your face. And I don't know how the architect designed that place. I don't know. Allie, have you been there before? You haven't been to Green Gables as yet.
No, I haven't.
You said that last time when Marion was here, you were going to go.
And
visit.
I was going to go. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. But
Ellen will have to take you.
There have been some health things that have interfered a little bit in my plans, but right. We're working on that with and take my sister and brother-in-law live here too.
Right. And do you know that the Wells family was so involved in all the things they donated for Melbourne?
Yes, I've been paying attention. So yes, I've figured all of that sort of thing out. It kind of reminds me of a living, breathing, hands-on This Old House, you know, episode, and that you would want, and how intrigued I've always been with paying attention to This Old House shows on PBS. And so this is, you can go and see it when almost hands-on, in essence. That would be
well, you feel like
exciting.
You're part of it.
Yeah.
You feel like it belongs to the community.
Yeah, for sure.
And Mauricio, you know, clean water and having electricity is such a commodity, and we know that the house didn't have electricity. So how did the Wells family survive without the electricity in the house and water in the house? Do we know?
In the beginning, there was an artesian well that Mr. Wells hooked up a generator to, and with that power source of the water running through, was able to actually create electricity for the home. And the house had one of the first indoor bathrooms, and the joke was, you do that inside the house.
Right.
Back in the day.
But for future, we're going to have a lot of events that you're planning to have there. People can have, I understand if somebody wanted to rent a space, they can put up, you know, you'll have what outside facilities for them. So if somebody wanted to have, like, say, maybe a wedding or an event, and they know that there's no running water and electricity inside the house, what are the plans to accommodate the visitors and the people that's going to be using the facility?
So our goal is to look at the house structurally first and make sure that it's safe, and that's what the architect is helping us put through. And then through the generous donations that we get and some of the monies that we're trying to raise is to create these outdoor bathrooms that people can use and feel able to go ahead and do the best that they can with what we have at the moment. So we're working towards building more opportunities to create that.
So if Daddy Warbucks is out there wanting to give his little girl a beautiful wedding, put up some money and get that place fixed up. In a couple of years, you could have everything you want for your little girl.
Right.
One thing I did want to mention that we haven't mentioned on the show before, but we have a lot of folks that work at L3 Harris, and there's actually a community matching, gift matching approved for Green Gables. The EIN number is right there. So if you are an employee of L3 Harris, every dollar that you donate gets doubled. So it's a matching gift. So please consider that if you're a member or a employee of Elbury.
Right. Or a person that just cares about historic sites.
Well, sure, you can donate, yeah, for sure, but the matching gift thing is a whole, I mean, for every dollar.
Ojas and I went to Asheville, and we toured the Biltmore Estate. Amazing what a group of concerned individuals can do. So the Green Gables, for people who are donating money and wants to know how it's been administered, we do have a board, correct, Mauricio? And we've, yes, got proper oversight, and every dollar is accounted for. So people don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. So Mauricio, give us the website one more time so someone can go on and either donate, or they can sign up to be a volunteer, or maybe they have a special skill that we can use towards restoring this beautiful home.
The website is greengables.org. All the information is there for past and future events that are coming up, including, you know, we have a tree lighting coming up on November 30th. We're going to be part of the Museums of Brevard tour of historic homes beginning December 1st, and Santa will be at the Green Gables December 2nd, so people can check the website there as well. And, or you can even go to our Facebook page for newsletters, updates, and dates and times for all these wonderful events that are coming up.
Yes, if you are the technical coordinator over there, Anne, you're doing a fantastic job on all your social media.
Yes. Yes, and anything you want to add to our show, because sometimes we forget, anything that our listeners should know about Green Gables. I know you volunteer a lot. A lot of my friends are there volunteering. There are a lot of people that are retiring now, and they can give a couple of hours here and there. Maybe you could make a pitch for more volunteers or whatever you need. Go ahead.
Well, we certainly welcome any help, either volunteering or with monetary help. But if you want to know what's going on, go to the website, and under Contact Us, just put your email address, and you'll subscribe to our newsletter. And our newsletter always gives a monthly newsletter. That's all you get, once a month.
That's awesome. Well, we will make sure that we get all this great information out about Florida Clean Water, as well as our Green Gables project that we've come to know and love so well. We will be back next week, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on 1510 WWBC. We'll see you next week.
We made it.
Yay.